What up? Here we are with another episode of the Who's Where podcast. We changing the name. We back. We took a little hiatus, man. We had some technical difficulties within the team that I had to address solo individually. You know what I'm saying? I had to dress up individually, one-on-one calls. It was getting a little out of hand, man. But we're excited to be back, man. We're changing up the brand a little bit, not just going with Cut the Check podcast, but we're just solely going with Who's Where podcast, where we bring UVA sports alumni stories and updates as far as what they're doing now. And as you can see, today we have Logan Carrington. What's up, Logan?
Living, man. Happy to be here.
Happy to be here, man. That's solid. We got the two guys on the podcast, though, man. The two co-hosts, man. Don Joe, what's up?
I'm glad we back rolling, and I'm happy to be here. Shout out my man, Justin Renfro. You know what I'm saying? Getting his little sports attire, clothing line popping, man. Much love.
And we got Max. What's good, Max?
Hey, what up, world, man? Back here from Charlottesville, you know, repping this episode sponsored by Who's Hauling. If y'all need us, you know what I'm saying, D.C., Northern Virginia, Charlottesville, we got y'all. Give me a call. But glad to be back, man, and I missed y'all boys on Sundays.
Yeah, man, for sure. So I guess before we even jump into this thing, that's just where we at in the world right now. Joe Biden just got elected. He's president-elect, man. So I want to know, essentially, are they going to have to drag Donald Trump up out of there? They're going to have to find him, and he's going to be dragging with his toes. They're going to be pulling him by the collar out of that joint. Like, how you feel about that situation with him, bro?
Hey, man, I think he's going to be the first president that don't leave on his own accord. And there ain't no law saying he has to. You know what I'm saying? It was just assumed. It's always been assumed they're just going to leave and accept defeat. I don't think he's going to accept that.
There's nothing else he can do. Like, I think the world is changing. It's a beautiful thing. If he really doesn't leave office, it's going to be interesting. But I don't think there's going to be, like, you know how Trump and Obama sat in the same room and, you know, they did the handshake and they briefed each other and all that. I don't think it's going to be all that. I just, you know, I think Trump ain't even going to be around. They're just going to get him a body.
Hey, I don't think they're going to. Once Trump's not president, he don't got that full Secret Service detail. I don't know if them two Secret Service guards that each president gets is going to be enough for him, bro. He got to have some private security.
You got anything to say on this topic, man?
I'm just happy he's gone.
Hey, man. I just want to thank the American people. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, this is a country divided. It's divided. I never even thought it was going to be this close, man. I never thought it was going to be this close. But this thing, I mean.
It really wasn't, though.
Biden's kind of running away with it. But the first 3 days, bro, is close. It shouldn't even been as close as it is right now.
But here's the thing, though. This is the thing. Y'all don't listen to the most trusted network, CNN. CNN has been calling it for months. They've been saying this for months. You know what I'm saying? That it's going to take, they said it might even take 2 weeks.
Well, that's because most of Biden's constituents voted in mail-in, where Trump was telling everyone to go to the ballots in person.
How do y'all feel about that, though? Because, like, I'm a fan of, like, mail-in voting now. Like, I had my ballot. I can make an educated decision on everybody. I even read the questions. Like, I had my ballot sitting for a week before.
I mean, you could do that. And it was, you can get what the ballot is before you go in to actually vote if you go in person. It's not, you got to wait till you get there and then be surprised.
You feel rushed in person, bro?
Yeah, you can make your informed decision before you go vote.
How many people, though, keep it a bean, though? How many people really, like, see what the ballot is before you went in the booth and went to vote?
I did the first two times I did it because I only know, like, who I really want to vote for president-wise, but all the other votes, bro, like, I don't know them. I got to look it up and make sure I vote for the right person.
And I'm going across the board.
All right.
I'm going Democratic Party across the board.
You're going lazy out.
Whiteboard me. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, you got to understand, I'm fighting in Kentucky right here. All right, y'all boys in Virginia, y'all blue. You know what I'm saying? We red over here, man. We got Senator Mitch McConnell in office. Senator Mitch McConnell, the head of the
Senate. Yeah, that's a bad joint, bro.
He been the head of Senate longer than I've been alive, bro. So that joint crazy. I think since like 86, 88, he been winning the Senate here in Kentucky. So they was putting money behind this lady that was running over here to try to get him up out of there. But he like the wicked man of the West, boy. He ain't coming up out of it. He won by a good margin, too. All them counties voting for him 100% zero. So, man. But yeah, man, we got to thank the American people for coming out and actually, you know, taking this drone seriously. Because to be honest with you, if it went the other way, I don't know where we'd be right now. And I still don't know what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, like, if things went the other way, man, it was going to be a long 4 years coming up. It's going to be a
long 4 years.
So
it's gonna be a bad joint.
It's gonna be a bad joint, but we're gonna push through now, man, and move forward. I don't know what else do we need to talk about that we haven't been on here since a while, man. Anything else happen? No.
Yeah, I mean, this whole sports through COVID thing, man. Oh, I don't know. It just don't seem real.
Talk about. I know exactly what we need to talk about. So Max got a security contract. He took over from KG.
Hey, man.
Hold on. Something happened already?
Already, dog. Something happened every week, bro.
Something happened.
Hey, dog, man. This place is rough, bro. And JG told me the same thing. He said, this place rough.
Hey, man, so. That's all I say. That's all I tell Max is this. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's a good little contract or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And I think when I tell Max, I told him, like, this is like a real estate. It's like you'll make your little recurring revenue. You know what I'm saying? So he said he get that contract switched over. He already done put it on his books. You know what I'm saying? He put it on his books, man. It was one contract.
Hey, I'll be the same way, though, bro.
Passive. Hey, Dom, I was reading. This is passive income. This is active, bro.
There's one thing that was in the fine print that I didn't notice, bro, was the fact of you can lose. This is in real estate. Like, the only way you lose your real estate, you don't pay your state
taxes.
Right, you can lose it every day. All right, man. So we're gonna upkeep this.
Hey, man.
So yeah, the most recent one is his officer on site brought his kids on property for his shift and let them sleep in the business center.
Four of them down. About four of his kids out there, bro.
Let them sleep in the business center.
Hey. It was on the couch in the business center, in the activities room, chilling, sleeping. It's a 10-hour overnight contract too. So they got some good sleep on them couches.
Hey, probably.
Yeah, one ball. Yeah, one ball doing 10 hours.
Yeah, I got one. I only got one. I got two guys, and they work. One works 5 days a week. The other one works 2 days a week. 10-hour shifts.
Hey, the property manager did just like they did Donald Trump, bro. Hey, come here, man.
Hey, let me holler at you. Let me tell you how I saw it. So there was like, I guess there was like a noise complaint, and he wouldn't handle the noise complaint, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, all right, cool. And then they almost caught one of the they got people trying to rob that joint like every night. So they almost caught the dude that was trying to rob the joint. So I was like, oh, okay. And then the property manager emails me like, I'd like to talk about an incident that happened with Anthony. So I was like, I'm thinking, all right, cool. We about to get, you know, some praise. I'm gonna go meet up with her. Hey, man, show me the video camera. Four of them just on the couch, sleep. I said, I'm sorry. Hey, I had to call Aunt right up there. I had to let him go that day. I told her before I even called him. I told her. I said he won't be back here ever again.
That's what I told Max, man. I said this is a black. You know, the people that's hiring us are black. We a black company. We come in as young black men trying to progress the. You know, what I'm saying they try to do business with black people, and here we are. Got our workers sleeping. Got the kids in there sleeping in the business center.
Sleeping in the joint, man.
I can't even believe we survived it. I start changing my books immediately. Like
we ain't coming to buy this one.
Yeah, this is coming in much longer.
she likes us, man, though. She's trying to work with us. But she realized this, they really need 24-hour security at that place for real. So, like, me and her had a talk, and I was like, look, they have break-ins there. People are stealing airbags out cars, like, putting the cars on blocks, like, legit stuff.
Where is this at? This in Southeast D.C.?
Hyattsville, Maryland, bro. Yes. So, and I was telling her, I was like, look, I get that, you know, there's some things my security guard missed, but, you know, now on, he just patrols a garage. He'll even patrol the property, just the garage. But
what do the ship reports look like with all that going on?
I mean, every ship report, every night he calls the cops.
It's like we got Stevie Wonder in the garage, man.
Nah. He be reporting it, but it be after the cops come. You know what I'm saying? Like,
we got Stevie Wonder.
Hey, he don't see it when it happens, but he got him. He good now, though. Hey, he got him a nice little snitch that can see the whole garage from their apartment that be calling him. And you know what I'm saying? If there's something on the floor he ain't at. He almost caught a guy yesterday too. You know what I'm saying? He's chasing out the building on foot. He called me.
Emails, bro. I just be peeping the emails. As soon as the email come in, I call Max right away.
Hey.
Like, oh yeah, I know. What's going on down there?
Hey, he called me yesterday, Dom. Said, hey, I'm on foot pursuit. Black truck. Get right down his license plate. Hey, bro. He trying to catch him out there. Hey, man. The one dude I got, hey, man, he trying to work. He working hard, man. My man, Steve. He used to be homeless. So I put him up at one of my houses. gave one of my cars. Hey man, he down for that job. He was mad. He called up the other boy that had the kids in there and cussed them out.
Oh, he
he know the deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This dude. This is his first full job. Yeah. He ain't trying to lose that. Oh,
he need
he
this
ain't messing around.
He's 10 hours 7 days a week.
Hey man, he was out there. He was out there chasing the black truck on foot, bro.
Hey,
I called Hinesville Police already.
That's all I know is that you know what I'm saying? You know, in the cartoons and the videos and stuff like that, the security officer is talking to somebody and like the whole joints get ramsacked behind them. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the joints going, bro.
That's what it be like.
Yeah, with a full vehicle. You know what I'm saying?
Nah. So some nights, you know what I'm saying, we get off at like 4 a.m. And it's definitely people that live in the apartment building that be calling him because he'll go around and he showed me, he'll close the doors. And like an hour later, he'll come back to one of the doors and someone would have like propped a rock up in it so people can get in. And then...
This is the one that took me over the top, though, bro. So what? I was cool with everything until it hit my line. Until it hit my line, bro. You know what I'm saying? I'm in L.A. Look, I was a 3 hour one of the property. So we set this system up. Like I said, this, it's like McDonald's. It's like franchising. You know what I'm saying? Like if Logan was a start, if I was to get a contract wherever Logan was, like I could give him everything he needs. All he got to do is put the people in place, right? Like you're going to have the security reporting system. You're going to have the phone, the hotline, you know what I'm saying? Everything you need security wise, you know what I'm saying? You might have to get us a couple of shirts, but other than that, you good. So the hotline, I say, Max, right? First day, Max comes on the job. I said, Max, man, hook your number up to the hotline. hook your number up to the hotline. Cause I don't want the people calling your security officer, they'd be like, hey man, you know, go F yourself or something like that. Something crazy that we can't recover from. Say something we can't recover from. You know, so I'm like, Max, I need you to take these calls, man. That's all you need to do. Max is like, all right, just don't give him my cell phone number. Give him my business number. Give him my business number.
My business line. That's my business line.
I know Max my whole life. I ain't never had this line or this number ever in my life, all right? So, I put this number into the system, bro. I don't double check it. I don't call it or nothing like that.
Hey, man.
And then somebody hits my line because, you know, like on the system, it's like a call system where it'd be like, touch one for this, touch two for this, touch three for this. They got all the way down to call the administration, which is my line. You know what I'm saying? So I answer, I'm like, hello. And the guy's like, is this a security company in Hyattsville, Maryland? I say, yeah, this is us. What's up? How can I help you? He's like, man, there's some loud noise going on out there, man. I said, oh, we're going to handle that quickly. My bad. I'm gonna talk to the officer right now. So I don't call the officer because I don't know the officer. Max is hiring these people, right? So I got to call Max. I call Max. straight Z's. Hey, bro. That's what I can't stand.
Hey, man.
I'm up. Everybody else is asleep. You know what I'm saying, bro?
Hey, Dow, let me explain, bro. It was the Saturday night of my fiance's birthday, bro. Come on, man. I had, you know what I'm saying? Come on now.
Hey, man, that's a tough job.
Come on now.
And so then I called the number. I'm thinking, all right, he said it's off. He said his cell phone be off. So I'm going to call this number that he said this was always on, right? I call that joint. Who answers? Steve.
Yeah, what the hell?
Hey, man, who the hell is Steve?
You know what I'm saying? Hey, Dom, right, look, and we went out for her birthday, you know what I'm saying? I said, this night's about you, we make it special. So I turned my phone off and my business phone, I call forwarded to Steve's phone. So they called me, it's gonna go to him. You know what I'm saying? Somebody gonna answer that, Jay. Hey, look, you know?
Man, I said, listen, bro. I started sending Max text messages. He got probably got about 4 or 5 text messages when he woke up.
I saw them jokes. I'm like, oh shit.
Like, listen, man.
It's funny though, man. Just all the stories. It'd be serious at the time, man, but they make funny stories, bro.
Hey, you know, man. I was asleep.
It's just like football. It's just like a football game. You know what I'm saying? Like at the end of the day, it's all fun and games. But in the midst of it, bro, I didn't see nothing funny.
Ain't nothing funny.
Nah,
let's jump into this, bro. We that's a good little thing right there because I was about to go into a story about Dom Joe almost taking my knees out in Miami, bro. And then we like,
hey, gonna take his head off, man.
We're gonna jump into this, man. So, the Who's Where series has been it's been a good reception for us so far. We got Logan on the podcast, man. Logan. Tell everybody like what year you was at UVA, what sports you did, all those different type of things like that, just so we know who you are.
Yeah, so Logan Carrington, Graduated 2018, College of Arts and Sciences. I was a media studies major from Northern Virginia. I currently live in the Silicon Valley, and I work in tech.
Work in tech. Specifically, your tech company is a...
We're a hybrid day cloud storage company. So I work for NetApp, and cool. I am a global product marketing manager, and I support all our enterprise applications, commercial go-to-market strategy, and content enablement programs for our sales and field rep teams.
So what made you want to jump into the tech space?
First thing was the money.
Money?
First thing was the money.
That was the highest offer you got out of college?
One of them. Since I ran track at UVA, and I realized that I wasn't going to go pro, I wasn't going to the Olympics, and I actually got injured my last year, missed the entire season. I was misdiagnosed by our training staff.
Misdiagnosed? And
they thought it was a cramp, and it ended up being a messed up Achilles. I had a tendonitis in the back of my leg, and I also had swelling around the bottom of my foot. I was able to walk for 5 months. I had PCP injections. I had laser treatment. I had chiropractor appointments. I had everything you could think of, but not able to run. So with that, I was able to get ahead, I guess, on my career in terms of, okay, you know, I'm not running. I missed from January on. So I was able to interview for jobs. I was able to use the injury to speak to it with opportunities. Mm-hmm. And being a digital media major, my dream was to be a broadcaster, like late and great Stuart A. Scott. Yep. But I realized the trajectory to getting to, say, ESPN or CNN or these other companies was going to take me working in Anchorage or Wichita or Milwaukee. And I was like, I don't really want to do that. And having had the last couple of summers working for software companies and tech companies in the summer with internships, I was like, you know what? I've already done it. Why not do that, you know, going forward? I worked for Oracle initially, the Classo program. I was promoted to run a competitive analysis team in Boston. And then I lived in Boston for about a year and a half. Didn't really enjoy Boston. I moved to California, and I've been there for about a year and some change now, working for NetApp, the company that I worked for as an intern a couple of years ago at Tyson's Corner.
Cool. Solid, man. So I guess you studied media studies. How was that at UVA?
It was a unique experience. I think when it comes to college, you learn a lot of different things in life. But I think college prepares you with the framework, and it's up to you to how you're going to run with it. And I think UVA is a very interesting place. And my sisters, both of them are younger than me, both at UVA now. One lives on the lawn, another one's second year. And I've been telling them is just to get involved in different organizations on and off grounds, right? And for me, it was, you know, being a media studies major, I was able to take classes with basic multimedia reporting. So I was able to see what the day in the life was of a reporter. My teacher was a political correspondent for CNN for 35 years, an Emmy Award winner. So seeing that, learning from, okay, you know, maybe I don't like doing this anymore. And this is like my second or third year at UVA. So I was able to decide later on that, hey, there's other opportunities that I could be doing, where it's, you know, technology, where it's media technology, where it's branding ourselves as athletes, because all of us, obviously former student athletes, making tons of money off of us. Now it's time for me to make money off of them. In terms of being involved in the athletic department, you know, I had 4 internships, as I mentioned before, with video services, athletic sponsorships, promotions, VAF, seeing how the businesses work and operate. And obviously, you know, I met Chief Chase around my third year. So getting more involved in the community was something that I think with UVA and digital media major, it gave me the opportunity to do so.
So I was over looking at the screen, Max. Max looked like he's sleep over there, don't he?
What you mean? Bro, I can't rock back in my chair because
the hat with the shadow, bro. That's your test ticket hat right there, ain't it? That's your test ticket hat.
Y'all remember the test ticket hat? Hey, don't give him the shooters on live air, bro.
On the live air.
Hey Logan, before you keep elaborating on your career, what was it like going to school like during the Heather Heyer time and like just like during the Trump era with people getting indicted, dudes is riding downtown and all that? Like, what was that like?
Difficult. I mean, my first year was the Heather Heyer. So my second week at school, Heather Heyer disappeared. And it was the first time in my life I'd ever lived alone. My teammate was actually friends with her. He was actually with her the night she disappeared at a party. And she left. So hearing that, he was getting investigated. You know, my team, obviously, we're like, okay, what's going on? Parents are obviously calling me. The Rolling Stones article a couple of weeks later, when Dina Ramo, I know, thinks she lost her job. And then, you know, she came back. We had Martise Johnson getting beaten up by an ABC cop in front of, I think, Boylan or Trinity. And that was the second semester of my first year. And then fast forward to my last year, KKK and neo-Nazis were there, as you mentioned before. And I was actually in Charleston when that happened for a teammate's wedding. So I saw it. And I was driving to 29. And I saw the neo-Nazi flag and Confederate flags on my left. And on my right, I saw, you know, Trump flags. And I'm just like, this is just a lot to take in. But with using the platform as being an athlete and being as involved as I was in a lot of different organizations, you know, I had a lot of say and a lot of power, if you will, for my voice to be heard on a lot of different things that are occurring. So obviously, you know, my first year, I didn't have much to say about Heather Heyer or the Rolling Stones article because I was new to UVA. I was just like, this is a lot. But, you know, around my third or fourth year, they're like, okay, Logan, can you discuss organizations and things we can be doing to help student athletes' mental health? And I created Who's Your Mentor, an organization program structured around same-sex, different sport athletes, fourth year, second, third years mentoring, first years and second years. Actually, Bryce Perkins was one of my mentees when I started. So, you know, working with different athletes to get them, you know, to where they need to be was an incredible experience. So I was able to flip maybe the negative things that were going on. And obviously the first election that I voted in, you know, Donald Trump did become president, but I didn't allow it to define me or people that I was around. And the energy that I kept around me was for the most part, pretty positive.
Solid. So you keep talking about being involved. I know that I came in and I spoke, was that the group that I spoke to that you were just talking about?
Yeah, so I was a part of the student athlete mentorship panel. Yeah. And I wanted you to come in and talk to us about your experiences on and off the field. And then now.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. Cause I don't even think we had anything like that. At least I didn't know about it.
Yeah. And that was something I think that I told even Andre, cause he and I had a call or we talked in person about just, you know, what was your career, you know, counselors discussing outside of, you know, playing ball or outside of, you know, running track, like what were they doing in terms of life? And for me, it was like, you know, both my parents, my dad ran track at UVA. My mom's brother played basketball for Ralph Sampson at UVA. So UVA was always, you know, the school I was probably going to go to and play a sport for. You know, Little Page was my uncle's coach. So I've known him for most of my life. So I knew that when I was going there, I'd have a network of people who wanted me to succeed. But it was on me ultimately to drive, you know, my own journey. And the biggest thing I took from all of that was, okay, I need to be involved in athletics. I need to be all involved in academics. I need to be involved in the community. I need to be more than just an athlete. Because I need to make an impact outside of just my sport. And the biggest thing I think I took from all that was, you know, I'm involved in these different organizations, but I got to have more than just a seat at this table. I need to be running them. And honestly, unfortunately, with me taking charge in a lot of these organizations, I was the voice for people that look like us. I was the only one. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to bring athletes on the track team, athletes on the football team, basketball, et cetera, to these meetings. Which is why I was like, if I can get Chase, I can get, you know, Jared Green, you know, friend of mine, a former athlete as well at UVA. If I can get them at these events, hopefully I can attract a different clientele in the athletic community, which, you know, we were to an extent, but there were still things that I know even now that they're still working with in regards to academics and athletics to make sure that they're, you know, in sync so that people have a kind of more of a career plan outside of just playing their sport if anything were to happen.
Exactly. And that's kind of our main point for this platform is, you know, mentorship's so huge and being able to like, and I think that, let me stay on task, but mentorship's so huge, essentially to the point where like, if you don't see it, you can't be it. I'm a huge believer in that. So you're only going to attract or accomplish as much as you were able to see physically. Okay. So, you know, people giving their secrets, like if it's Max with his real estate investing or it's me with a tech startup or Don with his engineering firm, like things like that got to be reciprocated back into the community. I think, and one thing we didn't mention at the beginning of this podcast is shout out to all the Black women with Kamala Harris being the first VP of the United States. That's a huge accomplishment, a milestone accomplishment that should go down in history books for sure. I mean, AKA Howard alum, you name it. That's big time for all Black women, not today and going forward, but women in general also. So right. I think it's a huge accomplishment that we didn't state in the beginning. But essentially, this all is why we brought this platform together, is to be like, you know, we gotta, you know, our community is pretty tight when we're at UVA, but essentially once we leave UVA, we kind of disperse and, you know, people right. do good things, but nobody really keeps up with everything that they're doing. So there's right. a lot of people we want to get on this podcast. And we're glad we can start with you, especially with the work you've already done. and going through things like that. So what other organizations were you involved with outside of the one you're just talking about?
Athletic Career Education. I was part of the Boys and Girls Club. I was a central liaison for all Boys and Girls Club activities. So we went to the one that's right behind where it's not the standard anymore, or what it's like near the flats. It was right over there. Worked with those kids, around athletics engagement, just being more active. I was also involved in Media Studies Society as vice president. I was a part of the National Association of Black Hispanic Journalists, their social media chair. I was a part of the board of directors as the athletic sponsor. So I worked with Dean Lampkin. I was just really involved in a lot of different areas because I just wanted to make sure that my voice was heard and people could see me outside of being, you know, the athletic guy who was always in athletics. And I created a TV show called The Who, which is a day in the life of an athlete at UVA. Thanks, you know, special shout out to Mike Slamowitz and his team and Ryan, et cetera, for working with us on that. But I just wanted to, again, make sure my voice was heard outside of just on and off the track. And especially in my last year being injured and not being a vocal leader as much as I should have been, and or being on the track, I was like, I need to make sure I'm involved in these organizations so it could transcend to organizations I'm a part of now post-college.
Well, I commend that because I don't think I was a part of any organizations. Well, it was hard to get me to do the ACE program.
Hey, man, I feel you. You get so many hours, man. They ask you to do a minute more, and you're like, well, I got to go home.
Right.
Yes, yeah. I know them too. I was going to ask them, too, if they was a part of any organizations, but I don't think so.
ACE program, that was about it.
ACE program,
I think it's tough, man. If you're a football and a basketball player, like, on that high level, I think, like, because there's so much of a spectacle wrapped around it, it's tough to really see what matters outside of that while you're in it. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
you know what the issue is? Is the fact of, like, okay, once you play and you start, and I agree, all right? But your first year, your red shirt first years, they need to be mandatory something for the red
shirt. That's true. Yeah, that's true. You're right about that.
They're not doing nothing. And I just
think nothing but time.
Our red shirt first year,
right. we had fun.
We looking for things. We have fun.
Hey, man, we had a good time, man. We had a good time out there.
Just figuring out things to do, man.
That's the biggest thing I took away from all that because, like, my first year, I said, like, it was my first time living away from home or anything, just doing my own thing. But also, like, my day would start at 5 a.m. I'd go till 1 in the morning every day. For 3 years, that was my life. You know, from the four different internships, the TV show, the mentorship programs I was a part of, you know, my life was literally like this for 3.5 years. I had no social life. Like, you would never see me out. Even after, you know, y'all had a big win, I was probably in the law school library, you know, preparing for next week. Like, my life was, I feel like my college experience was not what most people's college experiences were, mm-hmm. even if they were an athlete, because of the fact that I was just so involved and I just wanted to make so many impacts. And also, you know, for myself, maybe potentially to fill out a resume so I could have stuff I could speak to for an organization. But even looking back on it now, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm defined maybe my job, but I still want to be involved in different avenues outside of just that because I want to live a little.
Yeah.
But also it's just like now I was trying to figure out how much living can be done when there's still so much left to do. And especially when college supposed to be the best time of your life. But I was feeling like I was living like I was 30, 40 years old because I'm not really experiencing a lot of those things that my peers may have been doing because I was, you know, focused on other things.
That's a real statement. I mean, it's always like it's a give take for sure. It's a give take. Like, you depend on what you're going to give to it, what you're going to take from it. So the sacrifice is definitely worth it. Especially when you were pushing yourself in the right direction. So hopefully you'd be like, I ain't got no regrets in what I was doing. You know what I'm saying? Cause I know for sure, like, I missed some of the nights that I could have been out there, you know what I'm saying? Doing something or doing anything, but I was doing some studying or something like that. Not no book studying, more like film study. But, you know, I had to
I was out there in the streets, bro.
I had to put hours in on the film. I don't know if Max ever put any outside the McHugh Center film work in.
Hey, man, I put a lot outside of McHugh Center film, but man, y'all know what I mean. We offense don't really admit it, but we don't gotta watch as much film as y'all, bro.
I know what I'm saying. You ain't gotta lie.
You don't gotta look, we just gotta look at schemes and just make sure we know what the defense looks like. That's it. We don't gotta know the place.
Listen, bro. That's Luke.
What you say? We don't got to know the plays.
No. Like the defensive plays. Like the defensive plays. Like y'all got to know like what for between what formations, what kind of plays they can run out of it. But like there's only so many defensive coverages and it really doesn't matter to an extent. It's all about like the scheme, like who's in your zone, who you got a blocker, who you got to look out for. But we don't got to really know like, you know, you'll cover three packages and all that. We don't got to know.
I'm keeping it being, and this sounds like the mindset of a 4-8 team right here. We're talking about mentorship right now.
Dude ain't it. I'm gonna keep it real right now, man. Look, if you if now, it now let me keep it's real. Different if you're like a receiver. If you're a receiver or a quarterback or something like that, I get it. You got to know, you know what I'm saying? They got to know where everyone got to be at. You got to know where to line up on the ball, this and that. Yo. Hey, bro, I'm in the backfield. I can see everything. Hey,
little man,
so
man, I got little man Dom throw his hat, bro.
Hey, I got to know our playbook. Hey, no, and that's it.
We had some lackluster performances in a couple of years, bro. Hey. And the truth is starting to come out.
Nah. Them lackluster performances ain't come from me. Hey, them years we had three wins. I was on the bench, bro. You know what I'm saying?
I said, the truth started to come out, bro. We've been waiting for that truth to come out, bro.
What the hell?
So, hey, man. That's what's up. So, Logan, you know, you're doing all this stuff during school and, you know, you're setting yourself up for post career. I guess, did you have options? Like, we're just trying to figure it out, trying to find the best options. Like, I was talking to Luam on the last podcast and she was talking about her experience with finding a job. How is your finding a job experience going into your last year of college?
I think the blessing was because I was so involved with all these organizations. People knew who I was and the athletic academia, like, you know, Dave Lipinski in the career fair. Obviously he's in Bryant. Mm-hmm. So you guys probably would have seen him all the time. And he's a friend of my dad's, ironically enough. So it was a situation where I talked to him about what do I need to do? You know, what kind of organization to be part of? Because my academic coordinator, when I first got to UVA, bless her heart, she was a really nice woman, had no idea how to manage student athletes. And I took her advice and took four of the hardest classes I could have possibly taken to get into comm school. And my GPA went from like a 3.8, 3.9 first semester to a 1.6.
Wow.
So situation where I was like, well, this college sucks. College is hard. And the first time ever traveling, my first year we went from we ran at Tech, we went to Penn Relays, we were in California, we were in Boston. Like every week we were on the road. And difference from football, where you guys may leave on like a Thursday, get back on a Sunday or a Monday, we would leave on a Monday and we get back on like a Saturday. So the entire week I was gone. And indoor track at UVA, we were gone 6, 7, 8 weeks in a row. In a situation where it's like I'm like, okay, how do I do studying? How do I get classes done? And then we're proctoring exams. My tutor or my coordinator is on vacation with her family, ironically, during the ad drop deadline. And I was just like, this is very difficult for me to figure out how to, you know, get classes. I was like, I don't know how to do any of this stuff. So I was involved with, you know, Dave Lipinski in the career fair. And they told me, you know, get involved in this organization or take this class or ask these people for help or talk to your professors, which I did. And I was able to, you know, land interviews with using Handshake and other career fair opportunities with a lot of different companies. I had interviews lined up almost every week, you know, my fourth year, because I was able to connect with people off LinkedIn, and really, you know, tailoring a lot of my content on there, to be more professional and just being, you know, as assertive as I was with, you know, deciding where I was going to sign my national letter of intent. I was like, let me do the same thing when it comes to finding a job. The biggest thing I took away from all that with being injured was I was able to actually focus on it. Whereas a lot of my friends at UVA and other schools in the ACC, you know, Power Five, and also people who went D2, D3, they're like, yo, bro, we played our sport for 4 or 5 years. We got hurt right before the draft, and all we knew was ball. And we don't have anything else. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I was lucky enough that one of my parents got on me, like, are you applying for jobs? What have you applied for? You're not doing that. So I had an opportunity with ACC to work with the Orange Bowl committee. It looked good on paper. But then we looked at, okay, what is the breakdown going to be for the money? Okay, so you're only making this amount of money per month. How are you going to survive? What are you going to do for food? What are you going to do for this? And I'm like, okay, I can't take this opportunity. I have to do something else. Mm-hmm. And that was early enough in my fourth year where I'd had the opportunity to find different roles that I could actually pick something that was more closer adhered in line, if you will, to what I wanted to do. And then even fast forward to now, you know, I'm working in the tech space and I'm seeing it in the Bay Area, which, as you know, pre-COVID was the hot spot for technology innovation in the world. Seeing from all walks of life is allowing me to formulate my own ideas with starting and hopefully creating my own fitness nutrition company, to get in the market and help people in this space, because it's an area that I'm very passionate about, you know, like you guys, former student athletes. And I want to make sure I'm helping people keep their lives on track, especially with what's going on right now.
For sure. That makes plenty of sense. Oh, I didn't apply for not one job coming out. When I, by the time I graduated, I had zero applications.
Hey, man.
I know Max, he had a couple. Don Joe, he didn't have none.
I had him lined up.
I know I'm applying for a job in my life.
Lined up, ready to go.
And I got actually a story about that because, you know, my company, I just did a hire. Speaking of, if you don't follow me, I got a new tradition with my tech company where
sign a day, baby.
We got sign a day.
I didn't get no signing day, bro.
You know what I'm saying? Get you your signature. I get some donuts. Get some donuts, some orange juice. Hey. Get up. So, yeah, no, I was wondering, like, it's a big spectacle for the sign with the Redskins. Like, you're going to make that same spectacle with signing with Easy Turn.
Right.
but that's a good story about that hire, though. So we did Handshake, like you said. So Handshake's that new platform that a lot of people are using now. They didn't have it when we were there. But essentially, we use that platform to, you know, find candidates for this position, right? And the lady that we actually hired wasn't our first choice. My first choice is this guy, and I give him 24 hours to make a decision. 24 hours goes by. I told him I'm going to send the option to another person. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to number two if you don't respond in 24 hours, bro. So 24 hours goes by. I haven't heard from him. He calls me about hour 30. He called me, said, I haven't made a decision yet. It's just, I just want to make sure things is right. All those different type of lines. I hit him with, I sent the second joint out already. Like, we already done thought you wasn't going to accept the position. So we already moved on. And he was like, I just haven't been able to make a decision yet. I really want to do it. And after we got off the phone, he sends me an email and says he wants to accept the position. So now I'm in a position where he accepts the position, but I just sent another one out to somebody else like a few hours ago. Right. So I had to let him know, like, hey, listen, your final test for this interview was if you can make a decision, if you can make a decision. You know what I'm saying? So we ended up voting her because one thing I can't live with is somebody that can't make a decision. They sitting there, you know what I'm saying, dodging, dipping and dodging, like jump into the ropes, man, in double dutch. That's how I feel.
Make a decision and make it right.
Yeah, man. Like, that was his last test, and he got 24 hours. And how y'all feel about me putting a 24-hour decision cap on the offer?
I like it. I'd agree with it, man. Hey, yeah. Time is the most expensive currency, bro. You know what I'm saying? Can't be wasting it. You know what I'm saying? Make a decision to make it right, man. We don't do fence hoppers. Never have, never will. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, well, I was like, he knows it was written in the email. So that, I just felt like that was a red flag right away. Like, you at least say, like, hey, I'm thinking about it. Like, give me something, right? Like, talk. Ask questions about it, but don't go the whole 24 hours and don't hear from me, because then I'm definitely going to move on. So that's how I felt just from that. So that might be some advice somebody can use, maybe from a business hiring.
Yeah. I have a question about the tech industry for both of y'all, though. First off, like, how hard is it? Like, I guess, Logan, this one's for you. How hard is it climbing the ladder? But the second one, like, you know, in...
You say I ain't climbing the ladder, you know, bro? You say I'm not climbing the ladder, bro?
Hey, Chase, man, he coming at you, bro. He said you know that. He said you low on the road.
I ain't need like that.
Hey, Logan, this was more for you, bro. This was more for you. How does it feel to climb the ladder? Hey. How does it feel to slide down?
You got one of them foldable step stools, Chase. That's what you got, bro.
Logan took the little more conventional route. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you got your Redskins platform.
You're talking about the size of the company. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, and then also, like that. Can I ask my second question, y'all? Is there like for us in the engineering firm, nothing goes down in Philly without an inclusion rule. Like, it has to be, I don't care if it's either 15 or 25%, there has to be some type of minority-owned business on the project. So when y'all create apps or develop whatever, is there like an inclusion rule like that in the tech space?
No.
You got Silicon Valley experience, so I'm pretty sure it's not too much.
There's not. You're looking at the only black person on a marketing team of over 400 people. And the only one is under the age of, let's say, 45. So working in an industry where you're one of, the average tech company has around 5% is of color. Google, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. My company's at 2.5%. Well, sorry, we're at 2.5%. With the recent realignments and reorgs, we had leadership leave. We had other people go to rival companies, partners. We're probably around 1.75%, which is probably around 100 to 200 of our 10,000 to 15,000 employees around the world are of color. So obviously we're in a space where it's very difficult. So we have events like Afrotech, which were in October and November this last year. This year is be virtual because of COVID, where all the tech companies, all the black, you know, people in tech and also people in media and entertainment, you know, they come for about 3-4 days and we have workshops where Twitter CEO or VP of a design, Dantley, he came, he talked. We had, unfortunately, the guy from, I think it was Kaiser Permanente, he passed away actually at Afrotech the next day. He came and spoke to everybody and talked to us around his role.
Wow.
Over there. It was just an incredible experience. I was like, okay, this is the 5% all in this one area. So we all connected and talked, you know, after the events, and people were like, hey, we're hiring at Salesforce, we're hiring at Google, we're hiring at LinkedIn, you know, Adobe, Roku, et cetera. You just got to apply. But the issue is your first question about navigating the ladder. I've used the fact I'm the only person of color to my advantage. I'm pretty typically the first person on every call when, because I was Zoom. I'm typically the one who's preparing.
Don't call you out late today. Don't call you out being late today, man. I'm just letting you know. Don't call you out.
I was just making sure you wasn't big time.
It was
7:59.
It was 7:59. He was like, where your man's at?
I was making sure we wasn't trying to get big timed out here, man.
Hey,
I was already on time, Chase. I appreciate the calendar invite, man. Right. You know what I'm saying? That's all I need.
Right.
That's all I need.
Right. That was actually good, too, to see that. So having, you know, my being the youth in my organization, social media and engaging with video content is something that I know the back of my hand with producing and editing content. So I was picked and tapped to run a mega session for our Insight global event, which had over 15,000 attendees for 3 days. I ran one of our first sessions. We had 500 people on my first session and 1,000 on the next one. And we were able to be in a space where people were able to engage with the content. You know, with the fact that I am the only employee, you know, of color in my organization, I'm able to have conversations with our C-suite executives like, we need to change this stuff. Given the fact that the director of HR is a UVA alum and AKA as well, and she's friends with my dad, I was able to say, hey, you know, so-and-so, we needed to look at doing this, this, and this. So we're working the UGH program, getting diversity and inclusion, being a staple mark of all of our future hiring. Because I'm like, I don't want you just to hire me for an internship. I want you to hire me for internship and groom me to be in one of these full-time roles with my peers who are 40, 50 years in the industry so I can have a seat and make an impact at this table. Because I'm not just here to check off your diversity, you know, checkmark. I'm not the Rooney rule. I'm not your one applicant that's going to be here for 1 to 5 years. And then you're going to basically force me out, hire somebody else in with lesser pay, doing the same thing I was doing. And these are conversations I have with people. I'm just blunt. I'm upfront. You know, with what's going on with the Black Lives Matter movement, with, you know, George Floyd, with everything else. I'm like, nobody was talking about it. I was like, we need to talk about these things because that's me. That's someone that looks like me. Ahmad was me going for a run in Charlottesville on back roads. That happened to me in terms of me getting stopped by people because I'm wearing a UVA shirt and a hat and some, like, you know, some shorts. Like, okay, he's good to go because he's wearing UVA stuff. But let me come around again in like a baggy t-shirt and something else, that could have been, I could have been a hashtag. And those are conversations that with me being in my role, it allows me to transcend, not even just in terms of my job, but in terms of the impact I have in my company and externally, because of the fact that I'm so involved with these other organizations. I'm on the board of directors for Home First Services, Urban Development and Homelessness Group in the Bay Area, because homelessness is very high in the Bay, the highest in the entire country. We have the most millionaires and billionaires, but most homeless people, and a lot of them look like us. So it's like, you know, working with them in terms of changing that, working with Second Harvest Silicon Valley, it's a food bank service organization in the Bay around getting families back on their feet in relation to COVID-19. And I'm also in the process of working with some other organizations to basically just help with fitness and technology, and partnering with hopefully the 49ers and the Warriors, different other organizations like that to get some more brand recognition. But again, it's allowing the fact that I'm out here or out there, I guess, to transcend that ladder outside of just my job. So I can make an impact externally and internally.
Definitely, man. That's a great answer for Don's Joe's question. From a simplest perspective, just like, I just feel like you got to own it if you're going to have an inclusive that's really going to be respectable. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got it's going to be respectable. Other than that, if other people own it and you give them 15%, then, you know what I'm saying, they might try, but it's going to be some funny business out there. If you want to use the words of my man, Will Hill, you know what I'm saying? Doing all that. You know what I'm saying? So,
going to be all backflips.
Like, at the end of the day, like, if we're really going to, like, I'm cool with, like, the inclusive things, but, like, I feel like it should be inclusive. Like, I like inclusive percentages in, like, RFP proposals and stuff like that. Not necessarily in the company, just because I feel like we should be pushing ownership and not necessarily working for people. So that's kind of my thing is, like, if you want me to do something like in marketing or something like that, like, hire my marketing firm. Don't make me a marketing person on your team. Like, encourage me to create a marketing firm. You know what I'm saying? That type of situation. And then I can actually come do the same thing I just did for you via my own LLC or via my own company. And then ultimately, you know, I can push that into more and more avenues. Like, I think a lot of people like Eric Thomas and them, I think they do that a lot. Like, a lot of the teams that do their digital and their video, mm-hmm. and all different types of things like that. Like, they start off as employees and then they encourage them to just like make your own company and y'all just work for us and right. then go get your own clients as well. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how everybody eats. And it's not just like you work for me, I work for you. Like, for me personally, when I keep on hiring these devs for our software developers for our team, like, my plan is to start as a software development company. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. y'all work for EasyTurn, but we can split it four ways, 25%, 25%, 25%, 25% for an LLC, for a software dev company. You know what I'm saying? Then you have more equity in that, and that can be something that you had that passion for a little bit more than maybe working for EasyTurn, that type situation. So I think it's all about pushing the equity thing. And I think the only way that the equity is really going to be respectable to where it should be, because really 15% is disrespectful. You know what I'm saying? Like, because to be honest with you, whoever started this company, they started with just an idea, just like anybody else can have an idea. You know what I'm saying? And just because it's up to 10,000 employees now you got 15% to hit the diversity thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it was top of mind, we wouldn't have to tell you to hit 15%. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Like, right. That's exactly what I told them. I was like, if we're trying to hit this number by 2022, we need to be surpassing it right now. We need to be going to events. Like, one of our offices is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Why are we not working with North Carolina A&T? Our senior vice president of commercial sales is a North Carolina A&T grad. He's no longer here at the company now, but he was there. Why didn't we go to those events? And if you're saying, oh, well, see, I'm like, I need you to give me some action. Like, I think one thing I've learned about corporate America, a lot of people like lip service. I'm not one of those people. I'm somebody who is, okay, we're going to talk. I need to see some deliverables. I need to see some statistics. I need to see some results. It's like for you in football, you know, in track. If you're not producing, you're not getting interceptions, you're not getting tackles, you're benched. The same thing goes for life. If you're not able to hire or retain top talent, and you're just trying to beat the bare minimum of this quota to get a raise, you should be fired, or someone should be put into your role or fixing your role to helping you getting better. And I know I'm relatively young, so people are probably like, okay, you know, why is he saying that? But, you know, the world's changing. Like, there's Mark Zuckerberg, rather, is like, what, in his 30s, he's a billionaire. You know, anyone can create a company like a TikTok, you know, went from, okay, kind of using it, but now with COVID, it's multi-billion dollar industry where people are going viral, just posting something tomorrow. So we don't necessarily need these organizations to start our careers and our lives. You know, we can create things just like our peers do and be extremely successful, even without them having us, giving us a handout for a lot of different things, which is kind of what I've realized a lot more with this pandemic. If there's any blessing, silver lining in any of it, it's allowing me to slow down and finding ways to be more self-sufficient, and also to be more driven in other areas. Not to say I'm not right now, but to be more driven in other areas to encourage my peers who are struggling through things like myself, being, you know, former athlete. And all we know is, you know, we're here whistle in the morning and do whatever. And we're going to watch film, or we're going to, you know, train or do whatever and get ready for the day. There's more to life than just that. Especially if you're no longer playing the sport that you love. And it's just finding new things to be passionate about, you know, to have conversations like this.
It's real. You know, as you were just saying something, brought something to my mind. It's just like, I can pay you to make it for me, or you can make it yourself and I could buy it from you. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, that's really the difference. Who is it?
Who is that,
bro?
That was Logan.
Yeah, look at him.
Yeah,
hey, Logan, that was you. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I know them two. If it was them two over there, they would have been...
Mentorship, right?
Hey, it would have been nothing calm. It would have been nothing calm about that, bro. But what I'm saying, so yeah, like essentially, like we create Easy Turn and we sell it for $50 million. You know what I'm saying? Then that's the type of thing that takes it into generational wealth. You know, I know a guy that sold his company for $400 million to like another large player. So you create something that whatever company that you was working for, they buy it for $10 million. They buy it for $10 million. That's more than they could pay you. That's more than they could pay you for 30 years there. You know what I'm saying?
Right. 40 years there. 50 right. years. And that's the kind of thing that my parents, even with like telling people that may be older than all of us, that the company does not owe me anything. An organization does not owe me anything. As you know, with sports, they trade you. You had a great year, they trade you because they know that your value is higher. And when it comes to, you know, salaries, I'm like, okay, yes, I'm making this, but I need to work in different areas and I can make X instead of just Y. Mm-hmm. So even, you know, after this conversation, you know, forging relationships, conversations with other people. And I think you mentioned this earlier on, Chase, about, you know, when we leave college, for me, it was like, I knew a lot of people, but I had my core group. And the minute I graduated, that core group helped me to get into the door with my first organization. It's helped me with my last organization. And it'll help me when I create this company that I'm in the process of starting. So the biggest thing I think for me is just, I learned from, you know, college, it's a glimpse of the real world, but again, it's more of just the fact of like, where am I going from here in terms of trying to be more than just, you know, a statistic, or that part of that quote at 15%, to be able to, this platform is owned by somebody else who is, I don't believe, is a person of color who founded it. So it's like creating platforms like these things where people are paying us to utilize them. They're paying organizations, the people of color or people who are from an athletic background or both, to have conversations, and we're continuing to, you know, close that gap, if you will. And if anything, making our own lane so that we don't have to worry about fighting for equality or respect in certain areas of life, because we can create our own things where we're showcasing that we can surpass the suppression that's been given.
At the end of the day, ownership is where you want to have in every space of life. You want to have ownership in everything that you're doing. So recently, obviously, I'm starting to get more invested in stocks and things of that nature. I decided everything that I own, I'm investing some stocks in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm on Facebook all the time, I'm on Instagram all the time, I gotta get some Instagram, Facebook stocks, man. You know what I'm saying? If I'm about to get a Tesla, then I need Tesla stock. Like all those different type of things. Like if I'm gonna have it in here,
flex. Go ahead, let them know.
Hey, if I'm gonna have it, then I'm gonna I'm gonna have some equity and ownership in the company. Like that's just how it should be. It shouldn't be no way of just like, we're just working for people and just to be working for people, or we're just giving them money to just give money, because ultimately there's only so much money in the world, you know what I'm saying? And either you either have it, however much you have is how much you can keep, or you can put it to work for you and all these, and therefore you're never really losing it. You know what I'm saying? So essentially, if you bought a $80,000 Tesla and you then put $80,000 into their stock options, that's really break even. You know what I'm saying? Because we're about to make that money back. You know what I'm saying? So thinking like that thought process, as far as like keeping money in your family, in your generation, that's how generational wealth builds, is because that wealth is going through multiple times, you know what I'm saying? And essentially you're never losing it. You're just repurposing the money, you know what I'm saying? In a certain form of fashion. So
another question for you for that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You just asked, because that's one area that I've been spending more time involving myself in terms of stocks and financial space, but for all three of y'all, was that something that you knew in college, or did it take you having to take a loss financially to be, okay, I need to be involved in these things? A lot of my peers who don't look like us knew this stuff since like high school. Like they're having conversations about stocks, they're having stocks about investments and portfolio and, you know, investing in your Roth IRA. I was like, I don't even know what a Roth IRA is or a 401k. And I'm over here like, I thought I put money in this space, but in college, all I'm thinking about is, you know, X plus B equals MX2 to the square root of 15. And I'm not thinking about life. And obviously, you know, for you guys, there's a higher likelihood of you being able to do a professional sport than myself. So there might be more money thrown at you up front than someone like me who may take longer to get to that point. So I guess like my question is, in terms of the financial space, like what kind of things did y'all navigate through, where it be, you know, playing a professional sport, where it be just the financial stock stuff?
I'll jump in first and then I'll let them go. But essentially, like, it's not taught. You know what I'm saying? Right. Your people didn't teach you, then you're not going to know about it. Like, if your parents or somebody in your family wasn't doing it, then you're not going to know much about it. And I feel like if they're doing it, usually, like, I know my dad has stocks, but I don't feel like he thinks of stocks as, like, something where you know, like it's a source of income. It's just like, that's just almost like a savings almost type of situation. Like, I feel like you can use it to where it's generationally building exponentially, to where if you're doing it right with ETFs and different things like that, then ultimately you can take a $5,000 investment over a 10-year period, make it $1 billion. You know what I'm saying? If you're doing 300% returns annually, that type of situation, like there's a lot of people out there that's doing things like that. But to get to your point, it's not taught in my space or in our space. And I never was hip to it, even when I was playing the league. So now I'm just trying to educate daily. You know, I think there's a lot of things that we are benefit to have, or it's benefit for us to have access to these different YouTubes, Udemy. Like the information is out there now. People are putting information out there to where it's accessible to everybody. But you still got to know about it. So once you know about it, then you need to go do the research on it and really try to figure out, like, all right, these people living off this, how can I possibly get into it? You know what I'm saying? Cause people are teaching courses like that now. So that's what I would say on it. But as far as taught, never taught. I'm just starting. My first stock investment was last year.
Or, yeah. So me, I'll probably out of these two, I'm probably like further behind. The only reason why I have stock is because I have a financial advisor who pretty much said the same thing Chase said. He was like, yo, you need to put some stock in Apple. Everything you got is Apple. You got a laptop, you got an iPad, you know what I'm saying? So we're going to make sure you get something in there. So that's pretty much how I missed stock. I really don't know too much about a debt or cryptocurrency. I throw money in my Bitcoin or my Ethereum, and I just watch it just like the freaking newspaper. You know what I'm saying? So I still need to sharpen up on that for real. And then I just felt like it was low on my list. Like my first thing was when I was done playing, I was really like happy to like make money on my own. Cause I never had a job like that I like applied to. So when I was done working at the car wash and I started my company Easy Work Helpers, working with Chase, and I started making money, I was like, yo, damn, I'm doing this shit myself. Let's get it. You know what I'm saying? So I had to go through that whole phase, and then I had to take a loss, you know what I'm saying? Spending my money doing dumb things. And then I was like, okay, now that I've been here before, let me start. I started with just saving $200 a week for real. Then I started stacking. And I'm like, damn, why is this just sitting in my account? Why don't I put this somewhere? You know what I'm saying? And then that's when I went with my financial advisor, and you know, I got a 401k through the car wash. I work for my dad's engineering firm now as well. But because I've been working through the car wash like my whole life ever since I was 14, I still get paid through the car wash. So I got my benefits and all that through the car wash. And I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at. But I do feel like it's not taught, and I feel like I am behind the eight ball. And, you know, it's just about sharpening up and getting up to speed.
And I mean, so I was a little bit different, man, in the sense of like where I came from, where I went to high school. It wasn't taught by anyone in my family, but a lot of my friends, like, that's, you know, I'd be at Sunday dinners at my friend's parents' house, and that'd be what they talk about. Like, hey, you know, my friend's dad, like, hey, your blue chip stock that you have this amount of money and made this much percentage of that, you know, this week. And that was a big topic of conversation, was just wealth with them. And I was a person where, you know, where I grew up, like, you know, my high school looked like the ones on TV where like the student lot was cars that you thought would be at like a Fortune 500 company. And so I saw people make the most money where people, almost all my friends' parents' dads owned their own company, you know, or C-level at the very minimum. And right. So, and Chase and Dom know, like when I graduated, I didn't even think about football. Like I knew, I was like, that's not where I make my money. The most money I saw was people owning their own company. That's the way I want to go. So long story short, man, my friend's parents, one of my really good friend's parents, when I first got my scholarship, they're like, okay, so, you know, they knew my family's like, your mom had told me that she saved up this much money for you to go to college. I was like, yeah. She's like, what are you going to do with that? I was like, well, I'm going to put it in the bank and just let it sit there. She's like, no, so we're going to put this in a mutual fund. I didn't even know what that was. So I don't really have any stocks, like an app or anything like that, but I got a mutual fund. You know, I got a Roth IRA just because, you know, my mom's friend, she was like, hey, look, you can put this much in a year and it's tax deductible. I didn't even know what that meant when I first did that, but, you know, it's been growing every year. And then I have mutual fund because they're low risk. But then my other really good friend got me into real estate. And his dad was like, yeah, look, you can put a lot of money in your stocks, but stocks are tricky because you're not necessarily liquid. Like there are billionaires who have like millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in stocks, but they need it tomorrow. They got to jump through hoops and not gonna be able to get it. And he's like, you know, also when you take it out, you get a penalty for taking it out. You get fees and stuff like that. He was like, have a nest egg. You know, you got your mutual fund, you got your Roth 4IRA, and you got your 401k. This is your money that you do not plan to touch until you retire. He's like, but as far as what I do, instead of having these stocks that go up and down, he's like, man, invest in real estate. And that's what I do. He's like, look, not only are you making, if you're doing it right, you're making money monthly that's coming out. Your money is necessarily liquid in the sense that you can borrow a lot easier against your real estate, your equity, than you can against your stocks. Because stocks go up and down. Real estate equity rarely goes down, especially what area you're in. And then, you know, he was also basically just telling me, like, with real estate, not only are you making money monthly, you're paying down your mortgage. So you're actually building more equity. So he was like, his stocks, quote unquote, are different buildings that he invested in. And he kind of taught me the way. And that's kind of how I do it, where I have my, you know, mutual funds are safer. They're not really going to go down. Your 401k, your Roth IRA, you're not really going to touch for 30, 40 years. But my money that needs to be liquid, I put it all into real estate, and that's quote unquote my stocks. Like I don't mess with like the Apples and all that, just because I honestly still don't truly understand the stock market. And it's something that's learned, and I never learned it. And, you know, but even with a few years, maybe I would say like, you know, 7-8 years, I've been asking and trying to get questions about it. I still don't get it. Like these kids, my friends who have stocks have been doing this since they were 5, 6, 7 years old. They've had stocks. But right. For me, it's just, I'm putting money somewhere and I just can't see it. It's not tangible to me. So I don't get it. So I don't feel safe with it. Whereas a property, you put money into a property, you can almost receive your return on investment. You can see how much money you're making monthly. And very rarely is it going to go down. I mean, yeah, every once in a while it's an outlier, but to me, that just seemed more safe. So that's just how I did it.
I was looking at this past Friday, actually. I think I spent like, I was talking to one of my employees or whatever. And I was like, I just spent $100 a day, but my stock markets, I had a plus 172 day. So I really didn't spend nothing today. You feel me? I really didn't spend nothing today, if you want to think about it. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I was thinking about. But before we jump off, we've been on here about an hour, man. Logan, talk about what you're trying to get into, what's your goals going forward, and we'll end on that note.
I guess my goals moving forward, you know, appreciative, you know, Chase of reaching out to me for this, but the biggest thing I think for me is to be similar to y'all, you know, be a self-starter, be more entrepreneurial route. I'm in the process, as I said before, fitness nutrition, of creating an organization and a company that's similar to the Mural Tunnel and Temples of the world. that gives their customers the ability to, without saying too much, not have to worry around their nutritional aspect to achieve their fitness goals. As we all know, your bodies typically are built in how much and what you consume and when you consume it. So being able to track all of those things and being able to work out at the highest level is kind of an area that I'm looking at indulging a lot of my time into. Obviously, technology plays a major role in a lot of those things. So staying in the tech space in some sort of capacity is a goal for me. But also I want to be involved with the UVA a lot more as an alumni. Because I feel like when I was there, I was so involved in everything. And the biggest thing we always had problems with was getting alumni to go to events, to learn more about student athlete mentorship organizations, to donate, to just talk, to be mentors. And now I am, like y'all, alumni. I want to be still involved with the organization or with the university and the organizations at the university as a whole. So if I'm able to do those things, then I think I've checked off a lot of boxes for myself. You know, I just turned 25 a couple weeks ago. And the biggest goal for me was to get in the tech space, to make an impact, but not just to be there, you know, just checking off a box. It's to be involved in different areas and avenues. And hopefully I can showcase to my sisters, both of them, you know, younger than me, UVA, that anything's possible. You know, Kamala is now vice president of the United States of America, soon to be. Anything is possible. And regardless of what's going on in the world, we're able to utilize our voices, our brains, you know, our athletic abilities, our music talents. And I think now more than ever, I'm just more motivated. And my coach, when my, you know, coach of 13 years, when I played basketball most of my life, most people don't know that, but that was my first sport. He passed away a couple of days ago. And one of the biggest things he told me was, if it is to be, it's up to me. That was one of the quotes we said for years. And that was a part of my life. If it is to be, you know, it's up to me to get that stuff done. And, you know, now more than ever, I think I'm more motivated to, you know, read books like this, like $100 Startup, and other books just to, you know, educate myself on things that I don't know about. So I'm able to have conversations with people and really know what the content is. They can believe in my vision and we can have additional conversations going forward where we can say my company, Carrington, for example, if that's what it's called, is in the same, you know, likes as Google, Facebook, Uber, words uses action verbs.
There you go. I think the one overlying factor or underlying factor in this whole entire interview is make an impact. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you don't feel like you make an impact, find ways to make an impact. Because at the end of the day, we only got so much time, and the time that we have to increase the ground and to make up ground as far as a culture, as a generation, then we all got to be making impact. So we appreciate you being on here, man. First episode of the Who's Where podcast. We're going live. We video now. We appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week. We out.